If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
All right, everybody. Good evening, good afternoon. It is a wonderful, very, very hot day here in the great state of Pennsylvania. Hopefully everybody is having a fantastic week. I know I am. It's hot, but we're kind of making it through. Today's a conversation that I've been looking forward to for quite a while. I've seen this guy on a couple other shows, podcasts, talking to people that I'm very friendly with and, you know, like these guys quite a bit. And he covers a lot of topics I have an interest in. And we have, like I said, a lot of mutual friends, so I'm sure it'll be a good conversation. So without kind of diving into too much before the show, I'll make sure you hit all the links below to figure out where he's at, what he's got going on, as well as all the stuff that I got going on. Tigerfitness.com through the link below for the supplements that I use every day, as well as Fox & Sons Coffee. Use code Kyle at checkout. And without staying too long in this part of the show, let's rock and roll. All right. And today I'm here with Mr. David Patrick Harry. How you doing, man?
Pretty good, brother. How are you doing? I should probably change my name. I always keep it as DPH for open panels. I didn't even see that.
Yeah, man, you're good. So we kind of come from a little bit of different worlds, but before we kind of start diving into that, I should give it to you to introduce yourself to my audience and let everybody know what you're about and what you do.
All right. Name's David Patrick Harry. I'm a PhD candidate, finishing research on analyzing transhumanism, specifically comparing it as a new religious movement, a post-secular form of religion, and looking at its historical lineage and how it relates to or compares and contrasts with Orthodox theosis in regards to concepts of deification. So that's what my professional work is. And then I have a YouTube channel called Church of the Eternal Logos, which is really just me taking the sort of core frontema and lens of Orthodox theology and then analyzing a multitude of contemporary topics, masculinity, whatever goes on, historical instances and events, so anything like that. So I kind of cover a wide swath of topics, all from the vantage point as a contemporary American Orthodox Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I find all that stuff very, very fascinating. Like I said, I've listened to quite a bit of your work, and I had Jay Dyer and Jim Bob on the show, as well as
Buck Johnson. Both of them are good friends, so shout out to Jay and Jim Bob.
Yeah, it was absolutely fantastic conversations I had with those guys, and really, they kind of worked my brain in a way that I'm not used to kind of working it, kind of getting down to the roots of the way we know things and the way that we believe things. So currently, I'm agnostic, but a friend of mine, Tommy Sammons, who you might be familiar with, trying to grab books off my shelf here, had sent me these two books. So Revolutions
from Rose.
Yeah. And then, he gave me this Orthodox Study Bible.
There you go.
So,
it's all about the footnotes.
I have not gotten to them yet. And I feel so bad because I've had now hours of conversations with absolutely fantastic people on Orthodox Christianity. And it truly fascinates me coming from an agnostic perspective, but, there's just so much to learn. And then when you start diving into different beliefs and different religions, I just don't know where to go because I'm so ignorant of all of it. So I guess I kind of want to pose it to you. What got you to Orthodox Christianity and where were you before that?
So I was very much into the New Age, you could say, spiritual, but not religious, dabbling in the occult, ritualistic magic, that type of thing. So it's very much in the, you could say, the spiritual but not religious camp. And what got me into Orthodoxy is actually a pretty interesting, unlikely event. And I was in my PhD program, and I was certainly a non-Christian, non-believer. And I had a previous YouTube channel called Fractal Universe, which promoted a lot of psychedelic thinkers, Robert Anton Wilson, Terence McKenna, Timothy Leary, all types of various individuals. Alan Watts is a big one. So Eastern mysticism, stuff like that. And I was doing coursework, and I did research on my first semester on this book right here. It's called The Psychedelic Gospels. And it just had come out like 6 months previous. And what it is, Dr. Jerry Brown in this book highlights unique frescoes in Western Christianity, specifically in Italy, Germany, France, and then evidence within Turkey and such, that it looked like people were depicting the Eucharist as a psychedelic mushroom. Obviously, those that have dabbled in that world, you're going to be familiar with John Marco Allegro's The Mushroom and the Cross, talking about he made an argument back in the 60s or 70s, I forget. He was a Dead Sea Scroll scholar, and he made the argument that Jesus Christ was really a mushroom. So at that time, really interested in psychedelics and the New Age. And what I wanted to do then was look into this and come to, you know, do a sort of research paper on it. And by the end of my research, I came to the conclusion, a little bit different from the author, that this was actually arose in Western Europe due to a Gnostic revival of Catharism, also referred to as the Albigensians, and that where they were in Western Europe was also the place where these frescoes emerged. And there wasn't tons of them, so you have to look for them. Like Plaine-Carrault, France, was a little chapel that was constructed by the Knights Hospitallers. And I was convinced that these Gnostic heresies, which at the time I was very much interested in Gnosticism and kind of promoted a sort of Gnostic Christian worldview. We don't need to dive into the whole details of what that means. But when I started to do research, I found that these practices were unique to these Gnostic traditions. Of with anybody who's familiar with the Nag Hammadi library is going to be familiar that there's like 48 other books other than the four canonical gospels describing the quote-unquote life or teachings of Jesus. And I was very much interested in that world, and during my master's degree really focused on the influence of Hermeticism and Neoplatonism and Gnosticism in early Christianity. And I decided that based on a book by R. Gordon Wasson, it's called Russia, Mushrooms, Russia, and History, I believe. It's some type of variation of those three words, but it was written with his wife, Valentina Pavlovna, who is also Russian. And in it, they describe how all these words are used in Slavic languages to describe all types of various mushrooms, and that within English, particularly, we only have three words: mushrooms, toadstool, and fungus. And he argued how Slavic languages are mushroom philic, whereas some of the Western nations are mushroom phobic. And I thought, oh my gosh, if I want to dive deeper into frescoes or iconographic depictions of mushrooms, then I need to look into this Eastern Orthodox thing, given the Russian church and all that different stuff. So I dive into that, taking a PhD course on the history and theology of the Eastern Orthodox Church. And what happened is I was a non-believer, and I wasn't necessarily a believer after the course, but I was exposed to the intricacies of patristic theology, the history of Byzantium, and the general trajectory of the Orthodox Church into modernity. And I was blown away by essentially what I call logos theology and how the Eastern Church articulated this concept that was prevalent through Heraclitus, Plato, Aristotle, the Stoics, the Neoplatonists. But then I was already familiar with the Gospel of John, but seeing the depth of its articulation from some of the patristic fathers really kind of opened my eyes that, wow, Christianity really isn't this backward thing. You know, I think for a lot of people, when you leave Christianity, it's very easy to have a sort of snobby disposition towards Christians because they don't know, you know, this or that. Most of them don't know anything about the Nag Hammadi. They don't know about all these other traditions. They don't know about history. But once I saw Orthodoxy, I was like, wow, that's really interesting. And if I ever were to be religious, that would certainly be probably the best option for me. And eventually, and I'll sum it up by, I took a high dose LSD session, which I do not recommend to anybody, but that's where I was at that point in my life. And what happened is I sort of had a, you know, when you take psychedelics, it dissolves boundaries and you have these sort of Satori like experience, whether they're true or not, that's a whole nother discussion. But in the sort of euphoric, ecstatic state where you experience them, you're like, ah, this is the truth. And what happened for me was all these things I liked about psychedelic spirituality or the New Age, fractal mathematics, sacred geometry, cymatics, you know, how we're all one, panpsychism, all these different things. I began to, during this inebriated state, reinterpret from an orthodox perspective and see how many of these things that I like all fit together. And the major thing I was realizing at that point in my life is I really had no justification for objective standards whatsoever. And this was during the same time where the Trump and the Peterson phenomenon occurred. So it was those things that kind of shifted my perspective. And for the first time since I was a child, I grew up like a conservative Methodist Christian. And as soon as I hit college and got exposed to world religions, that went by the wayside. It was the first time I began to pray. And then fast forward about 8 months later, much of what I was working towards for this PhD was to be a university professor. And I was realizing that that wasn't going to be my future. And at that time, John Searle, probably the most famous philosopher still living, he's a analytic philosopher and tenured professor since the 60s at UC Berkeley. He was fired for sexual harassment for asking some woman to go out to dinner. And I saw that if the university could fire John Searle, well, then everybody's beholden to the university for their jobs as an academic. And I didn't know what exactly I wanted to do. My values were shifting. I was, quote unquote, more conservative. Was really interested in the history of Christianity, but more specifically this Orthodox thing. And I began praying and I was kind of lost. So I went to with a friend, actually, we just talked about on my YouTube channel last Saturday, Dr. Michael Moeller. I went with him to an ayahuasca ceremony in Joshua Tree, California. And what occurred was I took the ayahuasca. I had done lots of psychedelics up to this point and had a sort of vision of Christ and the literality of the incarnation of God. And that if God didn't incarnate as a man, how could God judge human lives? Which, of course, judgment after death is a motif within many mythologies and religious structures. So it all made sense that if God was to judge, it would only make sense that Christianity's explicit declaration that God became man, that had to be true. And then this vision came to me because, again, I was making thousands of dollars promoting psychedelics, that it was time for me to grow up and create, construct. And Christ was a carpenter and you build things. So it was time for me to build something. And that's when I decided to start a new YouTube channel called Church of the Eternal Logos. And that was in September of 2019. I've been putting out videos every week since. And that's kind of then became an Orthodox catechumen and really been going deeper and deeper into my Orthodox faith and really haven't turned since.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that whole journey is absolutely fascinating. And I know I have a little experience when it comes to the academic world because I'm an automotive technician. I almost went to go be an instructor, but same deal. They find your social media content and one thing that disagrees with, you know, the standard orthodoxy and you're done instantly. So I was just talking to my dad about it yesterday and it's a sad situation because I feel like you probably much like me felt like you had a lot to offer the younger generations in respects to, like, let's say a positive masculine role model and kind of being somebody a little bit more relatable. Cause I'm guessing you're probably around my age. I'll be 30 in November. So I'm guessing you're probably,
I'll be 35 in September.
Okay. Well, yeah, well, there you go. I mean, you relate to these people because they're a little bit closer to your age. So
absolutely.
I almost have to feel like that's on purpose, that we're kind of making sure that guys like us who don't necessarily follow mainstream orthodoxy amongst, you know, many popular beliefs and different things are kind of being shied away from teaching younger people because generations ago, people like you and I would have been leaders in our community, but now we're like pariahs almost.
That's true. Yeah. I, you know, there's not really much community left, in America. I think that's, you know, outside the well, so I'll just say outside metropolitan cities, there is mm-hmm. still a sense of community, but not to the degree of the mid 20th century for sure. And that's been really sad. And I think that's part of why the extreme division within the United States is there is no shared ethos. There is no shared, as Peter Berger, a famous sociologist, argued, a sacred canopy, a collection of symbols and myths and heroes and historic real people that then reify a sort of cultural identity of people. I think that's been shattered in America. And so there is nothing that unifies all Americans. In fact, many people find the history of the country, dreadful and don't want to associate with it. In fact, want to destroy it and transform it into something else.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people tend to find their community around political beliefs, which I think kind of sucks, if I'm being honest. I'm beyond blessed to play in a wonderful band and have wonderful people where we disagree on a host of issues. But, those issues that we do disagree on, we can talk about them like adults and we enjoy right. each other's company outside of that. But, you know, you see this whole phenomena with Trump and then amongst like these crazy woke progressives where, like, you know, if you don't worship the state of Israel and worship Trump, then you're outside my community. Or right. if you don't, you know, affirm my pronouns and believe in all the woke ideology, then you're outside my community as well. So I think we eliminated a lot of this community and replaced it with hollow political identities where right. people just kind of brand themselves on the internet as that.
No, I totally agree. And I think social media has a huge role in that because right. of the disconnectedness of actual face-to-face interactions, people right. then take on labels as their sole source of identity. So, mm-hmm. you know, ethnicity, where you come from, these types of things, your religion, these aren't our primary identifications as who we are. It's more so now what your sexual orientation is, what mm-hmm. type of clothing brands you purchase. And so this is all a degradation of identity. And unfortunately, because America, and I'm actually writing about this in my dissertation, is the first and second great awakening was influenced by a millenarian perspective of like creating a worldly utopia for Christ's kingdom. Mm-hmm. And America was believed even before the revolution that it was going to be the second Eden. And so I think there's a presupposition among Americans, and I'm just as guilty as anybody else, that we have totally fell victim to this concept of progress and have no historical identity or perspective. Whereas, you know, if you come from Greece or, you know, you come from Albania or, Armenia, you're going to have a historical perspective of people, language, who you are. And I think as Americans, because it's so consumeristic now, it's and progressivism, whether you're claim to be a conservative or not, like you're still on the same idea that, oh, we're progressing in so many ways and society's so much better. But, you know, what metric do we judge if society's better? Is it refrigeration? Is it morality? Is it lifespans? What metric do we use to judge whether society's better or not? And I think if you're coming from a traditional Christian perspective, we could say that, yeah, in a material way, there's many improvements. But as people, I think we're actually becoming less than our ancestors used to be, because suffering is something that's, and this is Christianity proposes this, that suffering is actually what brings you closer to God and elevates you. And I know you're into fitness and me too. And that same mentality is how you build a muscle, is you have to stress it, you have to fatigue it, you have to nurture it and then let it rest. And then it grows back bigger and stronger. And I think we as people, that I think that's a metaphor for almost everything. And so this movement, especially transhumanism and technology, is trying to alleviate suffering. And what that's doing is creating neoteny, a term for the retention of juvenile characteristics. People are becoming more and more juvenile, more and more childlike, and the state is becoming the authoritative figure and the God, as communism proposes, basically the deific entity for most people.
Yeah. I want to read the super chat real quick. CG here from Comitevix channel, support the people who support your people. Yeah, absolutely. So this kind of leads to another question, and I like how you kind of framed it around, like, are we necessarily better off? Because there is this idea, like you said, with progress, where we're making all these technological advancements, you know, people are living longer, but, you know, at the same time, we're also seeing birth rates decline, which like...
And literacy.
Yes. Yeah, that too.
IQ, first time in recorded history, IQ okay. dropped at 3 years in a row.
I actually didn't know that. Wow. Yeah. So, I mean, are we really better off if we can, you know, stream all the stuff that we do on our cell phones and then have AC around us, but though, you know, we don't have kids and, you know, new lives kind of coming about. and you know, new ideas through new generations and stuff like that. It's there's a lot kind of in this whole, you know, the whole deal with the Enlightenment, where, you know, should we just kind of focus all our ideas of progress solely based on, you know, the fact that we have a greater standard of living? Because there's like this inverse relationship of where we get more and more technologically and economically advanced, but though like the human capital and like the amount of kids that people have kind of goes away. I found that fascinating. And I kind of want to ask, it's like, can we have both, where we like raise everybody's living standards, where we're not doing such tedious labor, but still have giant prosperous, you know, potentially religious communities and families? I don't know.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. Again, like with my dissertation, tracking the ideas of transhumanism, alleviating suffering and labor is actually one of the main impetus, although beginning in the 1800s, so the 19th century, for why technological advance was going to create a sort of global utopia, and it was going to elevate and redeem man to the state of Adam before the fall. So everything that Adam lost, man was going to recover through technology. So, and whether people believe in God or not, I think most transhumanists actually have that presupposition still built in into their worldview. And so when you're asking about, you know, technology's influence, how did you put it exactly?
Basically, like there's an inverse relationship of technology as we get more technologically advanced, that people seem to have less and less kids.
Right. And yeah, I was going to make the point that from a Christian perspective, when Adam and Eve were cast out of the Garden of Eden, no matter how any listener, you know, believes, that's for your own, I'm not here to do apologetics, but sure, they were casted out and man had to toil and labor and a woman had birth pangs, right? So we see that technology is trying to alleviate manual labor, which is something that man, it was essential for man's duty. And it was part of his, the taint after the fall, is that he would have to work. And then also we see women not having children. And so I think from a spiritual level, this is a sort of moving away from the duties and responsibilities that we as humans have. Now, can you have a prosperous country with a high GDP and high standard of living and still be somewhat ethical? I suppose theoretically you could, but you would have to have a culture and an ethos that's embedded within a morality that collectively everybody's on the same page of like ethical behavior and like what's the point of our culture. Right. If the point of your culture is to get more and more GDP and more things, which is, of course, is the contemporary American mind of consumerism, then it's hard, you know, where does morality come into play? And if the only thing is about consumption and pleasure and hedonism and not about responsibility and children and family, well, then you just jerk off to OnlyFans girls and you consume. You consume products, you consume brands, you consume people, you consume, you know, passive sexual activity. And I think all this stuff is, again, a juvenile characteristics that for us to actually mature as a species, the only way we can do so is through gaining skills as men, which means that you have to work at something. Now, that doesn't mean you have to do manual labor per se, although I think that's incredibly beneficial. You know, I think this movement towards, you know, these white collar economy and stuff, again, sort of festers the dispositions that we're talking about. So I think you could, but unfortunately, there is no Western nation that you could say is still explicitly Christian. I mean, name a Western European nation, Canada. I mean, America would be your best shot. And right, I think you could make an argument because of the self-identification of most Americans is to be a Christian. But when you look at the values, when you look at the cultures that the people create, right, we can talk about intelligence agencies and propaganda and the influence of people through media, Hollywood, all this different stuff. But it comes down to our free will being made in the image of God. How do you, what do you choose to do? And how are you going to utilize your free will? And I think, unfortunately, we don't live in a Christian society, despite what the majority of the nation identifies as their religious identity.
Yeah. Something that really struck me to my core was when you kind of compared it to the Garden of Eden. And once again, I'm not religious necessarily. I'm still agnostic, but I'm still kind of exploring all these concepts and ideas because they truly interest me. But when you said that basically we alleviated man's duty to work and then now women don't have kids, I've there was a sincere feeling that I had when you said that. And, you know, I know myself as a guy, you know, who goes to work every single day to beat, you know, 200,000 mile GMC trucks day in, day out. There's something intrinsically rewarding about that. As frustrating as it can be, when the job's done and it's done right, it feels good. And, you know, I'm sure that women feel great when they're doing, you know, motherly activities. But, you know, and same deal, like you kind of brought up working out, you know, when you hit the, you know, the next PR, right now I'm working on getting to a 525 pound deadlift.
Nice.
When you finally pull it, it feels pretty freaking good.
Right.
So there is something very, very deep inside us that kind of desires that suffering or a challenge to overcome. And then, you know, it's never like happiness is never necessarily like a sustained state. Like you get that happiness in the doing. So when you finally right. do something, you feel good about it. You appreciate it. But I mean, almost instantly, anybody who's done anything that's worthwhile, you know, the moment after you do something worthwhile, it's okay. What's next?
Exactly. Right. And as you are, I'm sure I've already talked about it, know that testosterone makes effort feel good for men.
Yes.
And of course, there's yes. a testosterone epidemic right now and really in the whole Western world. So you talk about fertility, you talk about the lack of children, which we are below replacement rate. And so, you know, we could discuss depopulation and why that is something that is certainly favored by the globalist oligarchs. But, mm-hmm. You know, people just are so controlled by the technology and pleasure and the rewiring of their neurons through the dopamine hits mm-hmm. that, you know, unfortunately people don't have a attention span. I mean, we're doing a live stream right here and this attracts the yeah. right type of audience, but for so many people, you know, reading, and we're talking about literacy and IQ levels, reading is a huge part of the ability to be able to be a critical thinker. And I'm not here to say that everybody has to read novels or anything like that, but you know, there's a joke that people, you know, who move their mouth when they read, I forget which author it was, but they made a joke that my books aren't made for people who move their mouth when they read, because you have to build up that interior voice mm-hmm. when you read. And that is the same voice that is utilized to critically think. And so people aren't really in control of themselves. And so that which is controlling them is their sexual desires. And I think that's one of I know we're going to get into masculinity, but this is one of the big problems with men is because of the over-sexualization of our society. We are not, you know, we're not having families, we're not having long-term relationships, we're not having children, and yet those innate desires are still within us. And so then people sit there and masturbate and they watch pornography and they don't go out and get PRs. They don't focus on doing the hard effort work that makes you feel good. And I think that the journey to Christ is that process. So one of the gifts is not that you have a ecstatic, euphoric experience and everything's good after that. It's mm-hmm. as we talked about with the fitness or anything that you do hard or completing a job site. And then afterwards you feel good about the quality of work. That is the same metaphor for our lives and our journeys towards God. Like it's the journey that is actually the reward. And that's what really makes people happy. And so as people pursue the hedonism, and whatever pleasure is offered and stimulated, you know, they just become more and more weak and they don't want that hard work.
Yeah. And there's always readily available sedation. So I know a lot of people want to sit here and, you know, hypothesize about like all the foods and stuff that's kind of sedating them. But really it's just because, you know, we were hardwired long, 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 long ago to essentially seek out, you know, heavily dense calories. And now, you know, basically food companies have figured out that, hey, we like eating this stuff, so therefore we're going to sell this to you. Right. It's going to be ever so easy for you to sedate yourself through food. I have a tweet and I always think about it. And when I see people talk about like civil war or something like that, I always try to share it. And I think it was something to the degree of there is no civil war while you can drink a High Noon, watch porn and eat a Dairy Queen Blizzard, because right. you'll be far too sedated and far too comfortable to ever get up and ever do anything. And that to me, I know I said it, but I thought it was prophetic. It didn't go like viral or anything like that. But every single time I see people saying civil war, I'm like, nope, that will never happen. So right. long as, you know, the lights shut on and off, you got your AC and all that stuff, you I will agree. Never do a thing.
Right. And as, you know, Rome used to say, you know, to prevent war, that's, you know, make everybody go to the Colosseum. Because I think, and I love sports, and I love, you know, for example, the Stanley Cups going on right now in hockey, Edmonton and Florida. But competition is innately masculine. And so as the workforce, all these different things, they're making requirements to make it less competitive. But sports in general is a sort of masculine outlet for rage. Mm-hmm. And so same thing with football, you know. And so unfortunately, this is also a way in which people, like you said, there's not going to be a civil war when everybody has their Dairy Queen and they are able to drink their beer and then watch sports and masculine competition and allow that to be the outlet for their own frustrations. Mm-hmm. And once the grid goes down, once, you know, the food isn't there at the store, people are going to be in a really tough position. But, you know, if you're just looking at the tendencies of geopolitics right now, that's a real threat. And I think most people don't want to think about it. It's, you know, it's what are you going to do in the situation? So people just, you know, live and let live type mentality. And this is, I think, again, just part of the symptoms of the Western man, you know, being inundated with mass migration, being feminized through the technology, through his sexual appetites. And of course, pornography leads to more and more hardcore pornography. And shout out to my friend Rachel Wilson, who wrote an article.
Friend. She's okay. Fantastic.
Yeah, Rachel Wilson, check out her Substack. She has this is something, you know, you can't be lighthearted to read this. It's actually really dark stuff, but she has an article on hypnosissy porn, which is the using of binaural beats. And men start watching pornography, they get in harder and harder forms of pornography, and then they'll eventually get into this sissy porn, and it starts off softer and moves into much more harder stuff where they're using binaural beats to activate your neurons and feminize men. So it starts getting into sexual actions in which men are being penetrated first, probably by a woman, or, you know, it's subtle to the point where at the end of this tunnel, and she does a great job documenting the whole framework of this phenomenon, it leads into a male who wants to be a woman so that he could be penetrated. And it's like, you know, that's a real thing. And, but shout out to Rachel who wrote about that. And so I've talked about before, and, you know, for me, I use a metaphor in regards to what masculinity is, because I know you talk about the red pill and manosphere type topics. And for me as an Orthodox Christian, masculinity is all about the maintaining of order, boundaries, and the defense of things. And so I talked about how psychedelics dissolve boundaries. And I would argue personally, I have tons of experience with them, that psychedelics actually do feminize you because of the dissolution of boundaries. Now, you know, just for anybody out there saying, oh, what about all the John Hopkins studies for PTSD? I recognize all those. I'm not saying all that's not real. I think if you have traumas and you can dissolve boundaries, maybe you can dissolve past the psychological trauma that is being instilled within your mind. I agree with all that. But psychedelics dissolve boundaries. And I think when you look at the men who are going to, you know, these festivals or Burning Man, you know, these aren't the most masculine men in the world. Yeah. Because they're being told to dissolve these boundaries, the boundaries between male and female, the boundaries between men and women. And so I always say masculinity is like a castle wall. Femininity and the innocence of children are the jewels within. And then men upholding values and those boundaries within society preserves femininity and childhood innocence. Mm-hmm. You look at our society, men are so weak, those walls have crumbled. The enemies have, you know, conquered the gates, and now traditional femininity through radical feminism and then the sexualization of children, this is the evil one. This is Satan and his attack on something that men that follow God are supposed to preserve and protect.
Right on. Yeah. Shout out to Rachel Wilson, though. She's been on the show twice. So everybody listening over on David's channel, make sure you go check those shows out, because we talked about a lot of these topics as well. And she's just a wealth of knowledge and just one of the best people ever. And she's done a lot to support me. So I really appreciate that. So I kind of want to move into some of the red pill and manosphere stuff, because I It's sad because there's a lot of good, actionable information there that goes under the radar because people use this as a branding prop. So what you said about boundaries is that a lot of the stuff kind of in the more stuff that goes under the radar when it comes to Red Pill is about enforcing boundaries and eliminating covert contracts and kind of focusing on, you know, you being your own mental point of origin as a man rather than chasing women, right? It's about building yourself up as a man for you, so that way you have a world and you are desirable enough that a woman's going to want to enter your world.
Right.
It's frustrating to see people just throw out the, oh, well, this is about banging 50 women and, you know, you just go, you know, degeneracy coom or whatever like that. It's a shame that, like I said, this kind of stuff that I'm talking about doesn't get promoted more because this is the kind of information that guys could have and really improve their lives. And it's not even like it's in conflict with religious stuff because a lot of what you said, in my mind, aligns with a lot of red pill praxeology. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious on your thoughts on some of that. And then obviously with a little bit more of the flashy, unfortunate, you know, just brand red pill that's not like the actual actionable information. And where, if there's any confluence or contradiction with your religious beliefs.
Mm-hmm. So I've had conversations with Rolo over on The Crucible. So shout out to Andrew Wilson and The Crucible crew. And I would agree with much of the descriptive nature of the red pill regarding contemporary sexual relationships between men and women and dating and marriage. And I'm with them on all their critiques of legalistic marriage and the state being involved in everything, alimony, divorce courts, child support. Again, concede all those. When it comes to the prescription, what is the prescription? And you know, sometime, you know, so somebody like Rolo tries to say that he's not interested in offering prescriptions per se, but to continually document the descriptive dimension. Mm-hmm. But many people do offer prescriptions, and what it leads to building social status, acquiring wealth, you know, attaining a physically fit physique, and being able to acquire and have a sort of leverage over women in the dating market. But even if you do all that, that doesn't really affect everything that we just talked about in regards to the crumbling masculinity, the wall of masculinity that preserves female, true traditional femininity and childhood innocence. Mm-hmm. And so in regards to the prescriptive stuff, I really don't get where they're coming from because much of what they argue for is just another form of feminism. And Andrew's highlighted this. I forget which dating coach or a red pill guy he had on his channel one time, and you start acquiring and they say, oh, we hate feminism, we're not interested in feminism. And then they say, oh yeah, I live a really promiscuous lifestyle because I'm a good looking guy, I got money, I got social status, I can go to the clubs, I can get in the VIP section, you know, yeah, I take girls home, you know, two or three times a week. And it's like, well, what has occurred that allows women to be so sexually promiscuous? Well, feminism. So aren't you just a male feminist that is encouraging feminist behavior? And yet then you talk to men and then tell them how bad feminism is. It's like, well, you're contributing to the problem and you're contributing to more promiscuity and promiscuous women out in the world. So how do you change that? And I would argue that it's not so much about building yourself up for yourself. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we're really trying to talk about the correction of culture. So I think for some men that are in the red pill in the manosphere, they're just not, that's not what they're interested in. They're not interested in like course correcting culture. And many of them will say that what we're talking about and our prescriptions are to assimilate to the contemporary standards of women. It's not so much to forcibly move into a new direction and then acquire women that are willing to sort of play the game that you're playing. They're saying, well, we're going to just go ahead and play the game that the women have already played that we complain about. And it's like, well, that's not ever going to change the game. I would argue you have to be a man that first focuses on God or some type of transcendent reality, because I don't know how you can fully be a traditional man and not have something that you're worthy to die for. For me, it's the Orthodox Church. And I'm a convert. I didn't grow up in it. It's something that I came to later in my life after I made a lot of mistakes. But, you know, I've asked men that, like, what are you willing to die for? And some say there's not really anything, probably their own self-preservation. Some say it's their family or their girlfriend or something like that. At least that's moving in the right direction. But, you know, I say, I would argue most men don't have something that is ultimately worthy of their devotion and protection of. So how these men are going to navigate and how are they going to elevate themselves in the contemporary standard? I think another thing is for a lot of men, unless you become a faithful Christian and you find another faith, like you're going to be shit out of luck because the game is already stacked against you. And we've seen it with the dating statistics on dating apps about, you know, 75% of the men are swiped left, you know, 80% of the women are swiped right by the average guy. So how exactly are these men going to quote unquote compete? And I think it's not so much I would say you need to do all those things. So you need to become a better version of yourself. You need to figure out what your skill is, but it can't be for the purpose of having more sex, because that hedonism, even though there's discipline in the plan of building a career or monetary success or your body, all that takes real discipline, which is masculine. But once you do that, what is it all for? And it really has to be for a family, and then it really has to be for God, or it's all just the worship of oneself, which as an Orthodox Christian, I would say that is the reiteration of Lucifer falling as Satan. He wanted to be worshiped, and he took a third of the angelic hierarchy with him. And so the way in which Satan is really working on men and women, and this is why they're both pursuing hedonism and sin, is to just worship yourself. You have your own truth. You know, you have your own vision. You have your own needs that need to be satisfied. And I don't know of any great man in history that we honor because he was totally concerned with his own self-pleasure. In fact, the only ones I can think of, those are the ones that are mocked. And the men that were willing to die for something, whether it be their people, their nation, their family, like these are the men that actually are revered. And so how many men are we making right now that are going to be remembered in history for actually something that's traditionally masculine? Not so many.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a lot to unpack there. Man, where should I start? When it comes to red pill stuff, I like a lot of what you said. I think where they kind of come from is that like a lot of this is kind of like, okay, well, here's the information, and then you can kind of fill in the blanks from there. Where, like, I think for a lot of people, they do like to kind of go the monogamous route. I mean, you know, I'm married. It's just a lifestyle option for me. I love my wife dearly, and we live a great life together. We're going to have, you know, family and hopefully correct the courses of both our families. Not that they're terrible people or anything like that. You know, that's a whole nother, you know, topic. But, you know, for me, it's more of a lifestyle thing. And I think a lot of other guys kind of fall into that place too, because they find that the whole, you know, spinning plates and pursuing hedonism for hedonism's sake does tend to get tiresome. And that, at least in my experience, it eventually did become lonely. Although, you know, you can enjoy the presence and the company of a lot of women, eventually it is nice to have somebody that you just genuinely enjoy being with that person. You genuinely enjoy experiencing life with this person.
Right.
I think that's what a lot of red pill information could guide guys to, if that's the path they choose. And I generally think that's kind of where a lot of guys want to go, because, you know, I think there is something to that like, yeah, we enjoy sex for, you know, because it's part of who we are.
Right.
But at the same time, I do think we generally like having a companion to go life through.
Absolutely. And what's the point of the relationship is not to build something greater, which is obviously a family. You know, and as I said, I think a lot of men are going to be shit out of luck because of the elevated standards that women have and expectations.
Correct.
When you look at history, and this is one of my big hobbies, is watching like overviews of historical battles and stuff like that. You know, for much of history, a lot of men died in battle, you know, and there was always, and men are expendable, as the red pill in the manosphere talks about, you know, going to battle. Of course, the U.S. now is going to have women in the
draft.
Yeah, exactly. So not always the case now, but historically speaking, you know, they grew up in cultures in which people got married young, they had children as young as they could, and then men were potentially going to die before the age of 35 for the defense and preservation of their people. And so obviously that's not the case now, and we live on a planet that has, from last my understanding, is about 8 billion people, fourth of which is in one country, in China. So you know, what young men are going to do. Obviously, if you're a young man and you haven't had much social status or sex, the red pill and hiring a dating coach or somebody that's going to help you, you know, get your image together, learn how to correct hygiene, how to present yourself, how to speak to people, build up your confidence. I think all those things are good. Mm-hmm. My criticism with the red pill then is like, well, what then? And so in regards to these minor steps that they provide for people, yeah, those are good. And I think every man needs to work on themselves. I don't think a man can be satisfied unless he's constantly getting better at something. It doesn't mean that you're going to be, you know, the biggest or strongest. It could be you're an artist. It could be your plumbing career. It could be whatever your business is. You have to have some metric of personal growth and progress. Mm-hmm. And when we're talking about, again, all the guys that are addicted to pornography and technology and social media, you know, that is stunting them to have any sort of progress, which leads back to the juvenile characteristics. You know, neoteny, one of the examples is like a pig. When you put them in a pen, they have pink skin, they're hairless, this type of thing. You let that same pig out of the pen into the wilderness, its skin's going to get thicker, it's going to turn black, it's going to grow tusk, it's going to have hair, which shows you the environment that an organism lives in can actually dictate its genetic expression. And that's true for us as well. You know, people, you look at testosterone rates and just have the masculine presentation of young men. You know, I was watching a video from like the 80s and 70s on YouTube or something. Yeah. And these high school guys looked like they were in their like late 20s. And these were like 16-year-olds. But because of the toxins and the foods and the chemicals and everything that we're inundated with, and then the technology and then the personal choices and then the addictions, you know, people are in a juvenile state.
Mm-hmm. Right. You know, I think this one super chat kind of gets to the topic that we're talking about here. Gents, how do you, as an Orthodox Christian, decipher God's will / calling for your own, you and your own selfish wants? For example, I want to move to Florida. Is this God's will for me or my own personal want? I want to throw it over to you first because he asks as a Christian. Once again, I'm just interested in this stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm far too ignorant to even comment on what, you know, God's interpretation of somebody's will would be.
So my general response would be obviously to pray about it. If they are an Orthodox Christian, you could talk to your priest about it. But in regards to just making life decisions, how do you know which direction to ultimately go in? You're not always going to know. And that's part of the growth and maturation. And so you don't have to make the same mistakes I made. But as a man and to mature, you have to make autonomous decisions and follow through with them and see what happens. So, you know, for the super chatter, they may have moved to Florida. They may move to Florida and it may be exactly and providence will occur. They'll make the move. They'll see how things fall into place. A new job opportunity, a new life opens up for them, or they move and it's the exact opposite. But because of that experience, they're going to figure out like what's important and where to move next. Mm-hmm. And so this is where I would say if that's something that's really on your heart and you've already like made effort to see if that's a possibility and then things are emerging that you're like, oh, well, that would work. Then follow through with it. You know, you got to have life experience. But if, you know, you're wanting to just have like God speak to you in your ear and tell you, oh, yes, son, go do this and everything will be fine. That's just not how it works. So I would recommend reflecting on it, think about it. And then if it still resonates with you, go do it. Like make it happen. And you know, I've just talked with a lot of young men and so many, you know, it's death by paralysis mm-hmm. or paralysis. Yeah.
Paralysis
by analysis.
That's it.
Yeah. And, they think about getting fit. They think about starting this business. They think about doing X, Y, Z. And then you ask them, well, how many things have you followed through on? Mm-hmm. Not very many. And it's like, well, you know, you gotta follow through on something and come to that cul-de-sac or that dead end and then make a U-turn and go in a different direction. But the only way you're going to know which direction to go, it's like a pinball. You got to bounce around and kind of see where things lead you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One saying that came to mind as soon as you said that was, I heard the saying once and I use it quite a bit, but it's essentially a leap and grow wings on the way down where, you're not really going to know until you kind of dive all in on it. But you know, when you do that, you're going to have to figure it out. And sometimes kind of burning the boats behind you is the best way to kind of learn, because you don't really have any other choice at that point other than to make it work. And I think that is kind of the definition of a guy who kind of, what separates the wheat from the chaff and from the man from the boys, is that somebody who's willing to make it work no matter what. I know somebody you've had on your show, Elliot Hulse. Probably one of the people that got me into like the whole internet sphere really in general. I think the saying that he said was men don't make the right decisions. They make their decisions right. And that to me always resonated. It's not perfect, but at the same time, it's basically, you know, leap and grow wings on the way down. Make your decisions right. Do what you're, you know, make whatever you're going to do right and do it right. I always found that to be very, very powerful.
No, I totally agree with that. And, you know, and to look at what your providence is. So, you know, I've talked with young people and given the state, these are like early 20 guys, maybe coming right out of college, and they see what's going on in the world and they think, man, I need to get out of the U.S. I need to go to, you know, choose a place in the world that they perceive is better than the U.S. right now. Yeah. And I'm not here
perceive
to defend
is the big yeah. word, too.
And I'm not here to say that life in the U.S. isn't degrading rapidly. It absolutely is. And I right. would say it's happening in all Western nations. But then I'll ask him, like, where are your parents at? Oh, you know, they live wherever I grew up. Are they in good health? No, you know, they're not really in good health right now. And, you know, I'd love to see them more, but, you know, I live in a different state now, or I've gone on my own journey. Or they still live in the same town. And it's like, well, like, what's ultimately important for me? You know, my mother is ill. She has a disease. And for me, you know, I was thinking, I have a fiance, we're getting ready to get married, and we're thinking, oh, where do we want to move? Florida, South Carolina, you know, a good strong, and I'm in Indiana right now. You know, it's not the most beautiful state in the world. It's a good conservative state in the Midwest.
Correct. Yeah.
But after I thought about it, it's like my providence is actually here with my family and to take care of my parents and to, you know, look after my nieces that just graduated high school and are going into college. And, you know, as much as I'd love to go to a more beautiful state, it just feels like what my providence is actually to die here. And so whatever happens, if civil war happens, if the grid goes down, if I'm here for it. And I think Father Josiah Trenum, an Orthodox priest in Riverside, California, he talks a lot about how if you're an Orthodox Christian, you don't run. There's nowhere to run to. And martyrdom is the greatest gift of all. And I pray, God, don't put me to the test, because I don't know if I can actually live up to that of an ideal martyr. You know, all the men and women who have died who never recanted on their faith. But at least with the life that I've been given by God, it seems like that's my providence, and I'm not going to be going anywhere. You know, I'm going to be dying here, and I'm going to make sure that I look over my family. So I think that's another thing that people have to look at, is like, what's ultimately important? And if the grid goes down, what's ultimately important? Like, who are you going to be worrying about? What are your responsibilities? And I think as an American, because we put our parents in nursing homes, we don't realize that the rest of the world, when you become a mature male, your role is to actually take care of their parents when they can't take care of themselves anymore. And of course, because of the commodities and the comfortable life you have in the West, well, we just put our parents in a nursing home and tell somebody else, you know, well, I'll make more money, and you guys just stay in there and have somebody else who doesn't know them, doesn't care about them, and they're going to look after them for the rest of their life. No, I told my mom that I'm not putting her in a nursing home. And if I have to, I'll get a traveling nurse that comes to the house to take care of her.
Yeah. That kind of reminds me of it's not a big story, but when I was younger, I remember when my grandmother was passing away on my dad's side, my dad, my cousin Lori, and my mom had all went up to take care of her in her last days, because she had waited a little bit too long before she let everybody know that she had breast cancer and was unfortunately dying from it. But, you know, there's something beautiful about that, to think that, you know, you're here for better or for worse. And I commend you for that. That's absolutely beautiful. And especially the humility to say, like, I don't know that I would be ready to make the ultimate sacrifice. Like, I don't know if I'll be ready, because I think a lot of people would be foolhardy enough to assume that they would be that guy. Right. But I, to be honest, I mean, I don't think any of us do until the moment comes.
Right.
But, you know, I like your perspective a lot. And, you know, I'm here in southwestern Pennsylvania. And, you know, for the longest time, my wife and I wanted to move to Florida. But, you know, my mom has been ill my entire life. And, you know, it'd be a damn shame if we moved out of state and she never got to meet her grandchildren or, you know, heaven forbid she passes away before my wife and I have kids. But, you know, I like your perspective of saying, hey, I'm going to die here. I'm not going to run. And my duty is to my family, including the elderly, my family, who a lot of people would just kind of throw in a nursing home and say, you know, well, you know, I want to go live my life. That's beautiful. It really is.
Right. Well, I appreciate that. That's genuinely the life decision that I've made. And I think, again, in the West, it gets back to identity, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, what is our ultimate identity? And the breaking up of the family and in the extended family, obviously, was broken up before the nuclear family. But now we see, you know, antinatalism. We see billboards, depending on what state you in, literally telling you to not have children, that's mm-hmm. the worst thing you could do. And I've never met anybody, whether it was in an ideal situation or not, that, let's just say, serious people that have had children and not seen that as the most important thing in their life is to protect that child. Mm-hmm. And I know personally so many of my male friends that lived, you know, and whether they got married or not, they had the partner that they chose, but they were still living, you know, a pretty fun lifestyle. But once the child comes, to see them actually think about, well, what am I going to tell them when they ask about God? What am I going to tell them when they ask about what's right or wrong? How am I going to tell them when they, you know, when I tell them not to do something, they ask why, what's going to be my response? And this causes, I think, a lot of men to start to grow up, because if you have a child, what are you going to give them? And if you grew up with a good father, it's like, you know, every child, boy or girl, like, idolizes their dad as like a superhero until you get old enough to realize they're not a superhero. And normally that's about the time that you're a teenager and you start to rebel against your parents.
Right.
But, you know, I think it's really important for young men to realize, like, that's who we are called to grow up to be. Mm-hmm. You know, if we don't do it, who's going to? Right. Nobody.
Mm-hmm. One thing that came to mind earlier when you were speaking about, your mother was, I remember reading this, and I pass it on to anybody who had somebody that's recently deceased. And it was an article, I think it was Corey Taylor talking to Vinnie Paul. So I entitled the stream Becoming, because it's a really good Pantera song. And we're also kind of discussing the ideas of becoming something more than just what you are right now. But Corey Taylor had lost the bass player in Slipknot, Paul Gray, in 2009, and he had seeked to talk to Vinnie Paul because Vinnie Paul lost his brother, I think it was 5 years prior. He was Dimebag Darrell was murdered on stage in Columbus, Ohio, playing with Damage Plan. And Vinnie said this to Corey. He said, whenever you lose that person, just think, now everything you're doing now, you're doing it for two. And that just, it reminded me when you were saying about your mother being ill and everything like that, that, yeah, everything you do, if you do lose that person, you're doing it for two. So I know that isn't necessarily tied, but I just kind of wanted to share that with you and kind of get your thoughts on that as we kind of wrap out the show.
No, I totally agree. Mm-hmm. And that is why, you know, for Christianity, obviously the central focus of our liturgical services. So if you're a Catholic or you're an Orthodox or an Oriental, one of the historical apostolic churches, the primary focus is the Eucharist, which is obviously referred to as communion with God, communion with Christ. Mm-hmm. But communion comes through communication, truthful communication. Of course, Christ is the word. Mm-hmm. And that builds communities and people. And so from a Christian perspective, the world does not revolve around me. And my contribution is really what I can offer to other people. And again, obviously Christ, whether you believe in him or not, obviously I do. That's the ultimate giving, right? That's the ultimate responsibility. That's the ultimate masculine mm-hmm. thing, to come and redeem those who aren't essentially worthy of redemption and take it on your own as your own responsibility to be betrayed, to die in a horrible way. This is what every man is called for. And servitude to other people, I think, is the most beneficial thing that we can do as men. But we're so educated going up through school, is like, what job you're going to get, how much money are you going to make? You know, literally, and I see these conversations all the time. It's like, it's important to think pragmatically and think about money. This is also part of it. But I speak with guys that are in college and they do something they hate doing. And then they tell me, oh, well, according to this website, they make this much per year. It's like, but so you're going, I mean, that's another form of slavery. You're going to give your time and efforts towards something you don't even care about for a paycheck, no matter how big the paycheck is. And maybe they have an exit plan or something like that. But thinking about like what skills, what passions you have, and then what skills you have that you can develop. Nobody's gifted with a set of skills that can't, that goes undeveloped to attain some type of professionality with them. You have to develop your skills, but the skills are for the servitude of other people. The money is for the servitude of other people. As a man, my money, you know, especially once I get married here in the very near future, it's not about me wanting to buy the thing that my, you know, my latest desire or the latest flashy thing that I saw. Mm-hmm. It's about thinking long term. It's about protecting my wife, and we're going to have, God willing, have children someday. And what can I offer? How am I of service? And that is the role of the father. I mean, he was the provider, the caretaker, the protector, the leader. And that's what a leader is. And so people want to talk about Joe Biden, you know, or Trump, you know, the reasons why they failed in certain ways is because they weren't genuine leaders. I don't want to get into, obviously Trump's much better than Biden. I'm not here to shill for any Democratic Party or anything like that. But we see like the Bidens, whether it be Burisma and Ukraine or the payments from China, this is a selling out. This is a self-service. This is not a service for other people. Correct. Therefore, it garners no honor and respect. Mm-hmm. And that's what Western politics are. No matter what country you're in, the politicians are all paid for by the global elite, by the think tanks, the groups. So I believe self-service is the ultimate calling. It's just to figure out, like, how are you of service to other people? And where is that sort of Venn diagram, if you will, of like where your interests, your skill sets, and an opportunity and service that other people want that you can provide. Where does that all meet? And where that meets, that's what you need to work on. That's what you need to develop. That's where your future is. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful. What would be a few things that you would recommend to people to check out if they're interested in what you have to say? Because I want to know, and I'm sure my audience would like to know as well. And then after that, you can let everybody know where they can find you and support you.
Say that one more time. You cut out for a second on my end.
Oh, I apologize.
No, it wasn't you. It may have been my internet. What was the question?
So
books?
Yeah, well, any resources or things that people should check out if they're kind of interested in your perspective and maybe kind of learn more about what you're about.
Well, if you want to know about my personal perspective, obviously go to my YouTube channel, Church of the Eternal Logos, is probably the best way for that. In regards to how I acquired my perspective or what informs my perspective, obviously it's the Orthodox Church. And faith in God, you know, doesn't come about through rational argument. So even though apologetics are incredibly useful, and I do apologetics myself, I'm sure many people watching this do not believe in a literal interpretation of anything that I've spoken about biblically, and that's fine. But for me, diving down the rabbit holes of, it doesn't matter what it is, the Fed Reserve, Agenda 21, depopulation, mass migration, digital currencies, transhumanism, Neuralink, what are the things that connect all this stuff? And to me, it's clearly a spiritual warfare, and it's clearly about the transformation of mankind into something that isn't biologically intended, which I believe was created by God. Mm-hmm. And so, and I do not subscribe to macroevolution. I know that's a totally separate topic that I'm sure would be another hour, 2 hour stream defending that position. But microevolution or speciation, absolutely. There's clear evidence for that, that when a species, again, it gets back to neoteny, when a species inhabits a particular ecosystem or environment, their genetic characteristics then change to fit to that niche. But I think if you go down all these rabbit holes, I find it hard to come to the conclusion that there's a spiritual warfare. And if there is a spiritual warfare, then that means there's good and evil. But then where does that good come from? And then it comes to, like, obviously God. And then it's like, well, which God? Which one? And that's where I think apologetics can get into if people are sincere seekers. So you know, I just wanted to say, for me as an Orthodox Christian, evil doesn't have a positive ontological existence. So some people have a dualistic worldview where God is battling Satan and he's going to like win out right at the end there, but it's going to be a neck and neck battle. No. That's not the Orthodox position on evil, or theodicy, as the term is, like the explanation for evil. We believe that evil is a privation. So the only thing that has positive existence are these uncreated energies of God that are non-physical, that distinguish us from the animal kingdom: logic, mercy, compassion, truth, love, honor, glory, rationality. These things separate us from the animal kingdom. And it is by embodying these things that we become like God. And evil is the privation of the absence of those things. So evil, by definition, from an Orthodox worldview, is death. And that's what sin is. So the more that we sin, the more that...
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.
We are allowing death to enter us, the absence of God's energies. So when I then look at the world and I look at all these conspiracy theories, whether it be, you know, fiat currency or whatever it may be, Neuralink, it's all about a transitioning and to us. And I would say an attack on the image of God, being made in the image of God. Now, some people obviously listening probably don't believe in that, but I do believe that we are the epitome of creation. And I don't believe that through a macroevolutionary process that began with the Big Bang, you know, 13.8, but now I think they've doubled it. So it's like 26 point something billion years ago. And so, if everything going on right now is spiritual, then people need to make decisions in their life and begin to live for a higher purpose. And if you want to learn more about Orthodoxy, you can check out my streams. I would highly recommend my friend Jay Dyer. I would recommend my friend Father Deacon Dr. Ananias. He has a channel called Patristic Faith. And we do a lot of apologetics and try to talk about contemporary issues from an Orthodox perspective and see how the spiritual battle is right in front of us. You know, all these music videos with Satanism, degeneracy, sexual proclivities that obviously are not biblical. And all this is getting men and women to fall deeply into sin, to destroy themselves. And everything is about a self-destruction. And so the war then is making sure that you don't voluntarily destroy yourself, because like the myths of vampires, you have to invite them in. Well, that is still a cosmic relationship with evil. Evil can only work in so much that we allow it to through our free will. And so we need to be cautious about what it is that we're doing and make sure that we're not trapped into this web that is coming, because, or it's already here, because the demons and the devil is about getting us to follow them into the absence of God for eternity. And so the war is not between evil and good. The war is between evil and mankind, who exists in time and space, that can make free will decisions that will fall, but then can repent and move in that correct line. So if you need specific books on Orthodoxy, I recommend things like Byzantine Theology by Father John Meyendorf. If you're a bit of a head and you like history and you like just a quick, like a detailed explanation of what the Orthodox Church is, how it came about, the Great Schism, and how the Latin West developed in a contrary movement to the Greek East, check out Byzantine Theology. If you're more sophisticated in philosophy and stuff like that, you know, my favorite book is obviously The Cosmic Mystery of Jesus Christ by St. Maximus the Confessor. This is a really fantastic book, which gets into archetypes of creation, logos theology, that type of stuff. And again, the cosmic theological perspective of Christ's incarnation. So a bit of a rant there, all over the place, but if you guys have any specific questions or books concerning specific topics, you can always reach out to me. My email is churchoftheeternallogos@gmail.com. I'm on X @_DPHARRY. And also on Instagram @DPHARRY. So if you're on any of those platforms and maybe you watch something or you want a more specific question to a topic, feel free to reach out to me and I'll get back to you guys there.
Beautiful. This was a fantastic conversation. I had a feeling it was going to be, and it's been probably one of the more enjoyable conversations I've had in quite a while. So yeah, if you don't got anything else, we'll close her out there.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Kyle, for having me on. I really appreciate it for the platform. And absolutely, we should do another one in the future. If shout out to Jim Bob. He's in the chat.
Kyle, there we go.
I see my brother, Jim Bob. God bless you and the family, Jim Bob. Safe travels to Las Vegas. He's doing an in-person show with Dyer, I think week or in 2 weeks. I'm not sure. I don't know the specific date. It's in June, though. I know it's towards the end of June. So shout out to Jim Bob. Shout out to Jay Dyer. But I appreciate it, Kyle. Thanks for having me on, brother. And anytime in the future, if you want to chat again, let me know.
For sure. Absolutely. And yeah, Jim Bob, make sure you show all those people your tummy, just like what's his face, Wes Watson said to do. Thanks for dropping by, Jim Bob. And David Patrick Harry, thank you so much for coming on. Like I said, I knew this was going to be an awesome conversation. So we'll close her out there. Everybody, thank you so much for listening. acommoncrown.com for my band. Make sure you go check out all DPH's stuff. And until next time, everybody, take care.
God bless.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.